Hello, this is Katerina Koliva, Executive Director of the Council of Deans of Health, and I'm here today with our Chair, Professor Brian Webster Henderson.
Hello everyone.
This is our podcast, the Council of Deans of Health podcast, and we will be talking today about our academic staffing census report. So Brian, can you tell us why did the Council decide to conduct an academic staffing census?
Well, I guess there was four key messages we were picking up from our members. One was around the difficulty many of them had in recruiting academic staff, staff with the right qualifications and the right experience. Secondly, I think we've seen government targets set to increase and a real push to get more students into the workforce, and that certainly means for us the need for more academic staff within universities. Thirdly, we were picking up concerns around the age of some of our academic staff and the possibility that we could see a large proportion of those staff retiring or be eligible to retire in the next few years. And fourthly, we wanted information around staff by discipline in universities, and that information isn't readily available, so we decided that we'd get it ourselves.
And can you tell us what the census covered? What type of data did you collect?
Well, basically two types of data. One, we collected information about recruitment and retention issues within universities by faculty or department or school. And secondly, we assessed individual staff data as of the 31st of July in 2018, which really looked at demographic data, professional background, employment conditions, research activity. And following the analysis of that quantitative data, we started to consult with various members across the country and a range of stakeholders so we could surround that data with a deep understanding of context.
So quite a complex and lengthy piece of work.
Very much.
Can you tell us what was the most significant finding for you? I appreciate that it's quite a lot in the report and people will be reading it.
I would encourage people to read the report, but number one for us was around that recruitment to the higher education workforce is a pressing concern for many members, especially to teaching positions within universities. And then when you break that down, that takes on different shapes and sizes that we need to understand in relation to the growing demand for teaching staff at a time when staff salaries or salaries within the NHS are higher than salaries within universities, meaning that people like myself who came from practice are a bit probably hesitant to come into higher education and that kind of workforce. Around 50% of members, academic staff and nursing midwifery, we found are aged over 50. And so the whole issue I mentioned earlier about retirement within the next 15 years, say, means that succession planning is crucial, not just for individual institutions, but for us as a sector. I am worried that we're hearing a lot of conversations in press around the crisis of recruitment to the workforce. I'm personally worried about the crisis we could face around educating a future workforce. And so it's absolutely crucial that we understand with detail the challenges of people coming into higher education so that we can influence career choices, flexibility, look at solutions to get people into positions that means they can contribute to that workforce development.
And when the media, press and system leaders talk about healthcare workforce, do you think they consider the academic workforce are part of that debate?
Not at all, really. People think around the NHS and care to patients and the desperate need to provide care to patients. And absolutely those things are important. There's no question in my mind that they are a really relevant and crucial, important discussion. But actually equally important is the need to have a workforce that can educate the future healthcare providing workforce or health and social care providing workforce. And so I think it's up to us as a sector in higher education to absolutely raise the issues of concern and to work with others to provide solutions to make sure we have a seamless flow into the future higher education workforce with passionate, evidence-based skills, clinical skills to educate healthcare providers of the future.
So talk me through a little bit of some of those solutions and recommendations that the Council will be making to system and key stakeholders in government. How can we help enhance recruitment of the academic workforce?
Well, number one, we've absolutely got to recognise that there is a problem. That's really important. If our sector, if our government colleagues, if our arm's length bodies do not understand that there is a potential issue within the workforce for educators, then we need to understand and get people on the same page to begin with. I think universities need to start looking at changing the recruitment processes to look at much more flexibility. And flexibility doesn't mean watering down. It means much more flexibility about how people enter higher education and then gain development for qualifications like a PhD or a teaching qualification, etc. But we need to work with partners in the NHS and in the private sector so that career frameworks can be seen not just as education and then you go into practice and then you go into management, but actually we need to be looking at the whole workforce and look at higher education as a route for the workforce to go into, as well as clinical academic research careers, which actually would provide another solution in part to making sure that we have an equipped educational research focused workforce where we can actually not just educate the future workforce, but help them with the research, their evidence-based skills and their knowledge. So I think we are part of the solution, but we absolutely need to work with stakeholders to look at much more flexible solutions.
So you mentioned clinical academics there, and the Council of Deans of Health has been advocating for quite a while and actually quite purposely for better clinical academic career pathways for nurses, midwives and allied health professionals. And I understand the survey also revealed some key points about research and clinical academics. Can you share some of your thoughts on that?
Sure, some really interesting facts came up from that. So there's a great variation of clinical academics in disciplines and in geographical areas across the UK. So for example, London, as you might assume, had a much higher percentage of academics with a clinical status than, say, the rest of England, where, for comparison, the north of England had a very low percentage. That's a significant issue that we would need to address. The highest percentage of academics with clinical status were in podiatry, speech and language therapy, and therapeutic radiography. These professions show examples where there's been a lot of progress in integrating research and clinical practice. Unfortunately, the number of academics with a clinical status was very low in some other key areas. For example, children's nursing, learning disability nursing, and operating department practice. And so I guess our data shows that actually where there needs to be a more distributed effort in increasing the clinical academic workforce.
Thank you for that. And what does the census tell us about researchers in our disciplines more generally? So if you give me a little bit of your overview around research capacity and capability.
Well, I think the census show that there's a lot of variation. So we just do have to keep in mind that our disciplines that we represent within the council have only really been integrated into the higher education system in the last decades. Now that might sound like a lot to people, but in relation to some more established disciplines, that's still quite early days. That's not an excuse, it's just a reality of where we are. So it does take up time to build research capability in these areas. But we did find, for example, that over 20% of returned individuals in the census were reporting to have a PhD or a professional doctorate. But it was higher in some areas, for example, 53% in speech and language therapy, but below 10% for paramedic science. And I think that kind of shows that there's an unequal distribution of the academic skills and capability, and therefore some of the research skills and capability amongst our professions. We saw quite a high proportion of early career researchers in some subjects, and that's encouraging, given the importance of the evidence base to patient care in the future. But clearly we need more investment and support, particularly in underrepresented disciplines, some of which I've mentioned earlier.
Thank you for that. I think we're going to stop here for today, and hopefully our members, key stakeholders, system leaders, academics will read this report and follow also your podcast.
So I would strongly encourage people to have a look at it for themselves. They can access it through the Council of Deans website. And if people need more clarity or further information, we're really happy as a council to provide that.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks.